Hello, and welcome back to Adaptation Today, the podcast for anyone interested in learning more about adaptation and how to study it. I'm Rebecca Radatz, a research master student in arts, media, and literary studies at the University of Groningen, and your host for today's episode. This month, we have a fantastic panel that will discuss the pedagogical dimensions connected to adaptation studies. We have, of course, touched on this a little in our very first episode, in which Gracie discussed the annual joint conference of the Literature Film Association and the Association of Adaptation Studies, which focused on adaptation in and out of the classroom. So I'm very happy to be here today with Dr. Stephanie Cooey, Jim Fleury, Katie McLean, and Eleni Pales to build on this topic. Could you all briefly introduce yourselves to the audience?
I'm Stephanie Cooey, and I am an assistant teaching professor at the University of Colorado Boulder in the program for writing and rhetoric. And my research has primarily been in multi-ethnic U.S. women's literature.
I'm Eleni Pales. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Tennessee in English and Cinema Studies, and I primarily focus on American film.
My name's Katie McLean. I'm an assistant professor of American literature at Colorado Mesa University. My research includes late 19th and early 20th century American literature, adaptation studies, masculinity studies, and contemporary pop culture.
Hi, everyone. Happy to be here. I'm Jim Fleury, senior lecturer of film and media studies at Washington University in St. Louis, and my research focuses on media franchises and the historical convergence of the film and video game industries.
Well, it's so great to have you all on the podcast. And I want to start us off with a question that comes a little bit off as self-advertisement, but we do have, of course, a section on pedagogical resources on Adaptation Today's website. And I thought as an entry point into this discussion, Jim and Katie, you have been organizing this for a while now. And I just wondered if you could let our audience know a little bit about this section, what it is all about, and how the idea for it came into being.
Well, as you already mentioned, Rebecca, the team at Adaptation Today was partially inspired by the excellent presentation at last year's LFA-AAS joint conference on pedagogy and adaptation. Additionally, we all hope to create a consistent space for adaptation scholars to discuss their fantastic ideas about the teaching of adaptation studies within their classrooms. On our website, Adaptation Today, we therefore have a rotating call for peer-reviewed submissions on different classroom materials, such as syllabi, lesson plans, and assignments. We also ask instructors to share their experiences teaching adaptation studies via a blog post on the website titled What I Learned Teaching Adaptation Today, a space that provides the opportunity to share teaching reflections in an informal format with other educators.
So today we're going to be talking about syllabi, but we are on Adaptation Day hosting not only syllabi, but also lesson plans and assignments, as Katie mentioned. So we decided to start with soliciting syllabi so that we can provide examples of the variety of exciting types of adaptation study courses being taught. And then we're calling for more specific materials going forward in the form of assignments and lesson plans, which can be incorporated into existing adaptation classes as well as classes that might not be strictly focused on adaptation, but are still related at the same time.
But to return to that first round that we had this summer, we asked for syllabi submissions, a major task for any teacher to plan for students as well as explain to fellow educators. So today we're thrilled to share the materials from that first round, and we're even more excited to have two of those contributors with us today on the podcast.
Yes, I absolutely want to second the sentiment of being very grateful to have you here in the podcast, especially because you were in the very first round of submissions to this resource, which is especially exciting, of course. That is really wonderful to hear. And while all of us here are, of course, familiar with the syllabi, I had a read through them and really enjoyed them. I do believe that perhaps not everyone in our audience might yet have discovered them. They've been recently released on the website. So I was wondering, to catch our audience up on this a little, could both of you maybe describe the course and the syllabi a little?
So the course that I taught was it was a lower division English class taught through the Department of Continuing Education at the University of Colorado. And this was an asynchronous online course, which, like, there are things that, you know, I love being in the classroom. That's, like, definitely something I thrive on. So I really wanted there to be a lot of energy in this class, even though it is asynchronous online, and for there to be a lot of opportunities for students to connect personally. So when I was given the course assignment, and all I had was the title because it had never been taught before. So they just gave me this title, and it was The Modern Fairy Tale. And I essentially just decided to do what I know, and kind of like so I merged really like my own personal interests in fairy tales, my own personal experience with fairy tales, with my more academic focuses. So bringing in critical feminist theory, critical race theory into our engagements with fairy tales and their varied retellings over time. And I didn't want to lean too heavily on Disney, although, like, I also really wanted students to have that immediate way in to engage. And we are all familiar with Disney films, so they do feature as one of the texts available for students to engage with. And because it was an asynchronous online course, that gave me the flexibility to allow students to actually pick and choose some of the materials that they engaged with, which was also felt really important with a subject like fairy tales, which we already come into it with personal engagements, feelings, experiences, and so on. And I wanted them to kind of build their own adventure, so to speak.
That's really interesting to hear. And I personally enjoy fairy tale studies very much. So I was reading through your syllabus and I would have loved to take your class myself. Eleni, do you maybe want to say something about your syllabus?
Of course, I sort of get the vision now too that like mine is an upper level research topic class, so it's a variable topic course, so it's special topics in film, and so I just it's one of the privileges of my position at the University of Tennessee to be able to do what I want at the upper level, and so this enrolled a mix of English and cinema studies students. It was cross-listed in both, and I was able to do a kind of mashup of film adaptation questions, ideas, research topics. So my goal for this was to do a kind of half theoretical scholarly investigation of adaptation and half to get the students to be practitioners of film adaptation. So we began theorizing adaptation, adapting literature, adapting other forms, adapting comics and video games. But then thinking through the archival ethics of adaptation. So I had them go to the local film archive, the Tennessee Archive of Moving Image and Sound. And the archive was very generous in allowing us access to some of their footage so that the students could then do videographic work with archival footage. And so then it became about the kind of ethics of adaptation to say, what does it mean to be adapting someone else's home movies or just archival footage in general? So then we moved into the video essay and about sort of being practitioners of an adaptation form. So yeah, I love being in conversation, Stephanie, though, like at the upper level or the lower division to be like, how do you teach these differently? That's fabulous.
We had, of course, a third syllabus submission. Katie, do you maybe want to speak to that as a representative?
We did also have a third syllabi that was submitted. And just to kind of add to what Eleni was talking about with the different types of syllabi we're putting forward with this particular set, we are very happy to say that the third syllabi was very focused on adaptation studies as a field. So we have a lot of work there with the theoretical approaches, the types of essays you can introduce students to, and how that can get them into exploring adaptations as a field itself. So we were very happy with the variety we were able to put forward with this particular set of publications.
Yes, that was really good to see. And I want to come back to something Eleni just mentioned, because both of you talked a little bit about what inspired you to do this, that you're drawing on backgrounds of your own fields, of course. But Eleni, you were talking about going to the archive, for example, and while reading through the syllabi, I felt like both of you really had interesting, specific pedagogical practices, such as creating adaptations and videographic epigraphs or the archival visits that you just mentioned. And I was just wondering if you could speak a little bit about what drove you to make these decisions, to the backgrounds of that. And I'm thinking, Katie, Jim, if both of you have experiences with this from your own classes, you might just jump in on this as well.
This is going to be cliche and stupid, but the idea that you're adapting always in pedagogy, you're adapting what the what you're given or what constraints you have, but also what the opportunities are locally. So I'm very fortunate to work with one of the co-founders of TAMIS, the Moving Image Archive, so that I just wanted an archival piece to a class because it's there and the students should get involved in the archive. So that was really a driving piece. And another piece towards the end of the semester, I was fortunate to connect with two colleagues at East Tennessee State University, pretty local to us here, and two colleagues, Chelsea Wessels and Matt Holtmeyer, who are also teaching the video essay the same semester. So we did a little video essay symposium, which again, just sort of fell into my lap and was delightful and really exciting. But it's, to me, it was about seizing on the kind of like happy accidents and opportunities and resources that are local. So I would just recommend doing that, you know, whatever film archives or opportunities are local to you. The students, it works.
I think that's super fascinating. And of course, as someone who's myself still a graduate student, I can say for my own courses that I've always appreciated things like that. So I support that. Stephanie, do you maybe want to speak about your syllabus and the decisions you made to have your students engage in adaptations themselves, which looked absolutely fantastic when you were mentioning some of the things you've seen in the past in your course?
Definitely. That was one of the, I mean, that was maybe the most special part of this course were the adaptations that students created themselves. And the way that, it was an English class, so there was not necessarily like a creative writing component to it, but my background is in creative writing. And I've just noticed over time that emulation type activities in creative writing workshops tend to generate a better understanding of the text that students were engaging with in the first place, as well as allows them kind of the freedom within parameters to experiment with something. And then here, what I was able to see from students was like in writing their own fairy tales or their own kind of life story told through fairy tales on occasion, sometimes that was what they would look like. They were able to narrativize experience in ways that I don't know that they could have articulated without that sort of structure that they adapted from. So that was really exciting and really meaningful.
Yes, and it really speaks, of course, to this question of why do we adapt, right? And giving a practical understanding for adaptation can help also as a practice and not as a field just to study, which I think is always very exciting. Jim, Katie, do you have, I mean, you didn't submit a syllabus to the website, but I'm sure you have grappled with these questions yourselves. Do you maybe want to say something about this as well?
Yeah, definitely. I teach about adaptation in a little bit of a different way in a franchise class that I do, where I take the Henry Jenkins Understanding of Transmedia Storytelling, where I have students work in groups to provide extension material, like original narrative material, to an existing intellectual property, to an existing text. And they have to do like a prequel, a sequel, side story, but it has to be original material based on something that they are familiar with. So it's a bit different, but it is nonetheless still working with some adaptation principles.
And I think it's really interesting to do that because I remember from my graduate studies that I had a course on franchises and fan studies, and this question often came up, how do we distinguish adaptation from other fields, or how, maybe perhaps better, how does adaptation work together with other fields? So I think this is a good point to kind of also think about the fact that, of course, these pedagogical resources are also helpful if maybe you're not teaching a purely adaptation class.
I also have had different experiences in different kinds of classes with bringing adaptation into the classroom, which I constantly do and fully admit to in every way that I can. But in an intro level course, for example, I really do agree with Stephanie that I like to bring in that opportunity for students to adapt themselves, for them to see how they can understand the story better by recreating it, by understanding it in different ways and seeing how it potentially, you know, a story from 100 years ago still matters in how they can reflect it on themselves for today, or even older with something like fairy tales, of course. This semester, I'm really excited that I'm doing a version of this where I'm having the students select adaptations to read in an upper level course to see how other authors have extended these stories. So, for example, I have some students right now that are going to start reading things like a book that has Henry James and Edith Wharton as characters in the pre-World War II setting. And then I also have the recent novel by Percival Everett, James, that they're reading after going through some Mark Twain works and talking about how much it matters about perspective and ideas, but also how much it matters that that story is being told right now.
That sounds absolutely fascinating. I think that brings like a really interesting meta level into this discussion, of course. And I feel like all of you have sort of touched on this, everything you just said. just shows that adaptation in the classroom connects to a number of questions that are, of course, really at the core of adaptation studies, as well as more specific ones. Marty Gold addresses some of these really clearly in the Oxford Handbook of Adaptation Studies, for example, I think. So why should we engage with adaptation in the first place? How can adaptation help us understand other related fields? And how can adaptation theory be transformed into specific pedagogical practices? And so I was just wondering, since you all talked about your course specifically right now, if you could maybe speak a little bit to your interest in the connection between adaptation and pedagogy more broadly, perhaps.
I can speak really just to how in this course in particular, with fairy tales as the subject matter, that fairy tales have been meant to be instructive. They are kind of like these like guides sort of for all kinds of things like gender relations. And, and it was just kind of really provided a rich opportunity to engage with these things critically. And kind of like, it was almost like a meta instruction kind of a thing where it's like, these are originally meant to be instructive in their own ways that creators then then by adapting these texts end up making another form of instruction, like reteaching what we knew about gender, for instance. So a lot of fairy tale retellings are kind of deliberately doing that work of almost like correcting more like oppressive tropes and things like that. So by virtue of them already being instructive in this way, and then being able to reflect as a class, like what it is that we have learned from maybe fairy tales that we grew up with, and then what we are able to learn now. And that's sort of where I was thinking with that.
And there's of course also like this kind of relationship between the fairy tale and adaptation, where fairy tales have been adapted so much being part of an oral tradition often as well, right? Where adaptation is really sort of inherent to the fairy tale. So I think there is a very special relationship in your course between practice and theory, where adaptation has always been such a core part of fairy tales that it's really nice to give the students this opportunity to become practitioners of the fairy tale themselves, because it just feels like a natural extension of what the fairy tale does, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's everyone's to adapt.
I'll make it less fun. Mine is a total buzzkill. The idea that like one of my pedagogical goals, especially around election times, and this was after the last election, was saying, what are the ethics of reappropriation, of remixing and reusing pre-existing footage, and the sort of media literacy around how images and audio and just our collective culture is reused and to what political purposes. So having students do some of that with someone else's home movies and engage the ethics of that, I found adaptation to be primed in that kind of conversation about how you ethically reuse and the purposes to which media is repurposed and reused. So in terms of just a larger pedagogical goal, wanting students to think critically about the ways in which remediation happens, it felt like adaptation was uniquely primed to ask those questions. But that's less fun.
Less fun, but very timely. I know this was a topic that came up at the Adaptation Studies Conference this year, where we were talking about this idea of how news are remediated and adaptations as well. So thank you for that. Very, very important topic at the moment, I think.
And it's something that's going to be continued to talk about with the rise of AI and the discussions of how we reuse things and what we ethically can. I know it's something that's going to be a panel at SAMLA coming up very soon at the Association of Adaptation Studies set of panels. So this is something adaptation studies absolutely needs to be thinking about. And it's important for us to discuss it, how it impacts our students and what they're doing in the classroom.
Yes. Yes. And that I hope this is right, even if it's not overtly the goal of some of our classes, that media literacy is always on the syllabus.
Definitely.
I think that's really important to mention. Also, what you touched on, Katie, with AI brings, of course, in questions that of copyright, which also then goes back to larger, the much dreaded theme of fidelity, perhaps, and where we draw boundaries. Because, of course, AI always raises this issue of whose material is being gathered by generative AI, and how do we maybe discern what is being used? This idea of media and AI literacy in adaptation studies is really going to be an important topic, as you just mentioned.
Oh, I was just thinking about the ethics of adaptation and how, when it comes to franchises, how can I bring that in? And it's making me think of like how, what kind of credit is given to people? How many people who work in media franchises are not provided credit for their work, whether it's in video games or novelizations, where sometimes there's ghostwriters like George Lucas being credited for writing the Star Wars novels in the 70s, which were not written by him, of course. So it just, this issue of ethics, I think, is really fascinating to consider, certainly in terms of media literacy, but you can also apply it to more of these, you know, into franchise practices as well. So this topic does, it speaks broadly to adaptation studies, certainly.
And it also matters so much for us wanting our students to take ownership of their own work in the classroom, of them seeing themselves in the work that they're trying to produce. If we want them to create these excellent adaptations as part of their assignments, we need them to see themselves in that work. But then where does that level of creative ownership become complicated based on how you're working with others, where you're getting materials from? Those are important conversations to have with students so they can also understand the way adaptations function within that cultural norm as well.
I've been thinking a lot about this recently because I'm working on a piece on adaptation and AI. And so I've been thinking, when you were speaking about the usage of AI and adaptations in the classroom, that of course also these questions are now coming up a lot, both perhaps for adaptation studies more practically, but also in terms of writing essays, of how we engage with AI in class and how this affects adaptive practices. So I think there's definitely like larger dimensions of adaptation studies here that of course carry across our specific themes of the courses that we are engaging with. Are there any thoughts you'd like to share on what you submitted or on your courses that I haven't touched on? Because of course you know your courses best. I was unfortunately not able to take them. Unfortunately, that is not possible. So is there anything you would like to add?
I mean, I think that really, really the context out of which this course was created is really important in how it, like, in the shape that it ended up taking, just in that this was, I want to say this was fall of 2022, the first time I taught it, and many students were still in the online mode because they felt more comfortable, you know, and there were all of these reasons to continue on in the online mode, even as campus had gone back to quote unquote normal, essentially. But these online classes were being, we saw much higher enrollment in across the board in online classes. And so there was also this way that I just wanted this, I wanted to take advantage of the asynchronous form, essentially, and think about it as a benefit rather than something that like, oh, we had to do because of this and this, and think, what can I get away with in this class that I cannot get away with in a synchronous course? And so really the, I mentioned this just briefly earlier, but this idea for like a cafeteria style menu of readings was kind of key, and really was like, when you can give students choice over what they engage with, automatically they are more invested, more likely to see themselves, less likely to use AI in their responses because they actually have things to say. and that was just kind of a bonus, especially when in online classes. I don't know if you all have found this as well, that and maybe it was also a timing thing, but that AI use, and especially in first year online classes, is more proliferative than it would be in-person mode. So there were just kind of things about this course that aligned really well with my overall like pedagogical aims, thinking about the student as the whole person. We are in this still kind of very depressing space, but also finding ways to get excited. And then if like by default we don't use AI, then great. Like then that was like a bonus. So yeah, that was my teaching supervisor at the time, Teresa Nugent, she had used a cafeteria style menu before, and she suggested it to me, and we kind of brainstormed about it, and we're like, oh, it could be like Aladdin, like column A, column B, you know, kind of a thing, and kind of had fun with that.
I think that's so exciting to see and really great of you to share, because I never had a class, for example, where that was taught this way, and I think it looks really exciting. I really like this way you were thinking about social circumstances surrounding your course, the way you were adapting your class to the circumstances, which is really lovely to see. Eleni, did you want to come in as well?
Definitely. And it dovetails really nicely, actually. I'm glad you went first because this sort of speaks to the intricacies of COVID responses. That when I taught this for the first time, the push was to be back in the classroom, to be back in person, which was kind of whatever. I don't need to editorialize about those particular choices. But regardless, it became okay, we are back together. We're grateful to be back together. And so we're going into the archive. We're doing as much, sort of in-person experiential things as we can. And so that became, and then the video essay symposium, again, going to Johnson City and ETSU, became part of celebrating being back together. So that certainly underwrites some of what was going on in my syllabus and in the course. And then I will also just credit the Middlebury workshop for the videographic epigraph that I know whole courses are taught on the video essay as a form. And I was sort of playing a little fast and loose to have a video essay component in an adaptation class. So I was leaning heavily on the Middlebury workshop. So I'm very grateful to them and their published resources. And I just recommend if people are interested, that's a great wealth of information over there. So that became a big resource for me and for my students. So I'm grateful for that.
That's really good to hear. And I think that sounds like a lovely concept to bring students back into the classroom in a nice way and to find sort of a pedagogical ground for that. I'm thinking of maybe just to draw this to a close, asking you a final question, which is, do you have any advice for other instructors of adaptation, be they specialists in adaptation or maybe just wanting to use adaptation for pedagogical purposes? And if you do have advice, would you like to share it with us here?
I'll just say, seize the local and communal around you. That part of adaptation, one of the joys of adaptation studies, things like this, the collaborative, the communal, the shared. That I was really fortunate to find community partners who made my course better, made me look good because they were so great. So, local archives, local other institutions that are doing similar things, that opportunity for collaboration can be really rich and productive.
Yes, and I would add also just for me a kind of just like a syllabus building kind of a thing, which is to always allow extra space, like allow like a couple of weeks that are blank, because I always want students to be able to latch onto something and be like, oh, well, we have to talk about this or this, this adaptation meant so much to me, so we have to discuss. There has to be some space for that. And the syllabus that I had submitted for this was the last week when we watched Shrek, for instance. That was like student demand. We absolutely like, because that is like kind of like the amalgamation of adaptation of fairy tales and to this unique effect. And it was phenomenal. And we the Shrek was like the cherry on top. So I'm so glad that they brought that to the table.
That's amazing. I love the idea that, and I hate that, but I love it that sometimes the best weeks are the ones that are student demanded. It's like, what am I even doing then? You guys are too good at this.
I think this really speaks, of course, to the fact that we all don't come to works unaffected, right? So I love this idea of having a week where you can also kind of see where do students there have their takes on fairy tales in your case from, which I think is lovely. Jim, Katie, do you have some advice as being in charge of this pedagogical resource? Is there anything you would like to say?
I would just encourage people to check out all the resources that are available on Adaptation Today, because even if you're not teaching an adaptation studies specific class, you can incorporate these so easily. Picking and choosing, to go back to Stephanie's point about this cafeteria style format, you can pick and choose from these syllabi or from these assignments or lesson plans and apply them to your own classes. Like I've been saying, I teach franchise classes or a video game class. I still do a week in adaptation or just a lesson in adaptation. So just feel free to pick and choose.
And I would just add, be brave. Sometimes adaptation studies and diving into that variety that we've been talking about can be kind of terrifying as a teacher. It feels a little better when you know exactly what's coming. And that's not always possible with adaptation. I have students this semester in the class I mentioned earlier where I'm letting them pick their texts a little bit more in early American lit, where they're just every day making me a new meme on how they feel about the particular works we're talking about. And it actually has created fantastic community within the classroom. They look forward to making memes together and to figuring out how the texts work. But I didn't make that an assignment. They started doing that themselves and adapting themselves because the space is there for them to try things out. So being brave, letting them try things and seeing what works can really bring some excellent opportunities for engagement and collaboration in the classroom overall. And speaking of that bravery, we do want to have one final plug and reminder that the call for papers on peer-reviewed pedagogy content remains open at Adaptation Today. Our next round of pedagogical materials will consider lesson plans and adaptation, which has a deadline of January 31st. And our call for the blog post content rotates on a monthly basis. Additionally, we recently accepted a second round of submissions on assignments and adaptation this fall, and we cannot wait to share those materials with the Adaptation Studies community very soon.
Yes, thank you so much for reminding us of that, Katie. So if you are interested in becoming a part of this resource, please go and check out our website for more information. We also post about this on social media where you can find reminders about this. And as a final point, I just want to say thank you all so much for being here and giving us all of these insights, giving us this advice into adaptation and pedagogy. And a special thanks, of course, to Stephanie and Eleni for offering us the opportunity to engage with their fantastic syllabi. As Katie mentioned in the beginning, you can now access these, as well as Dr. Carmen Pereira's syllabus on literatures in English and film. All of these are on the Adaptation Today website, so do look that up if you have not yet done so. Next month, we will be back with a very exciting episode on professionalization with a focus on journals. We are supported by the website Adaptation Today, the link to which you can find in our show notes. To keep up with Adaptation Today, visit our website, adaptationtoday.com, join our listserv where you can stay up to date on all the news in the field, or follow us on Instagram or X. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, and we'll be back next month to speak to you about all things adaptation.